Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to our monthly show on education with myself, Shaista Token, and my friend and colleague, Sumaya Bulbulia.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Jazakallah for tuning in to Teacher Moms on Radio Islam. We are available on medium wave 1548, satellite free to air decoder, audio sharing at radioislam.co.za, and DSTV channel 826.
Our topics for today's show are stress management for parents and learners and a much anticipated one, how involved should parents be in the learning process of their child. We do appreciate the feedback we are receiving from our social media Facebook pages, and this assists us with choosing our topics. Sumi, I'm sure you will agree that it has been a very stressful term for both us parents and teachers.
Yes, the term is relatively short, just coming back from exams, and then we had a long weekend with the public holiday as well as our Eid break. Learners are now getting into assessment mode. We know that our matriculation trial examination has just commenced and stress is starting to build.
So let's start off by defining stress. Okay, so the scientific definition says it is a body's way of responding to change that requires a physical, mental, or emotional adjustment or response. It is a reaction caused by ongoing, increasing, or new pressures and demands. So now when we're talking about this physical stress, we're talking also for our learners, little things like carrying heavy bags or packing their timetable and sporting gear. Then we talk about the mental stress that these little learners go through also, tests and examinations. The emotional aspect is one of the more severe types of stress. What's going on with family and what's happening with peers?
Remember, Shaista, today life has become so fast-paced and the demands placed on our little ones has increased substantially. It's as though we are always chasing a deadline. We are off to the next activity and doing something all the time. If we look at most adults, the underlying trigger for many illnesses today is stress relation. And kids today are also extremely driven as individuals. They are self-motivated, which although is very healthy, can be a major cause of internal stress.
Of course, and also the school environments these days are more challenging. There's a lot more happening at school. We're trying to make our environments at school more holistic, so the kids have cultural demands, market days, be it school contests, book quizzes, assessment demands, where the curriculum has increased the number of assessments as compared to the amount of contact time that we have as teachers. Then the timetables include the sporting activities during the school day, where it's practices or tournaments, going to other schools. Deadlines are now all set in place for the months of September, where it's constant work and constant exhaustion on behalf of our learners. And too much of this type of stress sometimes becomes a barrier to their success and lowers their performance because they are not sure which direction to turn to. As parents and educators, I think we need to recognize that our learners do have a lot of stress and try and assist them in trying to relieve some of it or decrease it in ways that make it easier for them. The biggest thing for me, I think, as a parent is communication.
Yes, definitely. Remember that mentally now, parents, educators, as well as learners have started preparing themselves for the year end. And remember today, many instances of stress actually result in learners hindering their own development, and stress can actually manifest into actual physical illnesses, which we are seeing at schools. We see when learners are writing their term examinations, we many times find them hyperventilating, getting panic attacks, unable to attend school because suddenly they find themselves ill.
You know, particularly with our matrics, they've consistently worked throughout the year, but because it's known as the biggest examination of their lives, they go in already with this type of anxiety into an exam hall. So what we do is we coach them and we try and tell them that majority of the time writing that assessment is the easy part, but overcoming that mental state in which you are causing your anxiety is the harder part.
And remember, with our grade 12s in South Africa right now, all eyes are on them. Like you said, it's known as possibly the biggest exam of their life, and we know that ultimately it's not the biggest exam of their life, but it is the one that's going to open all their doors. So the pressure is on them countrywide.
No, definitely, and we can see that with the types of suicide rates that are constantly increasing year after year, is these kids place pressure on themselves, and the fact that it's being published also, that's added stress and undue pressure that they also place on themselves. So this is where parenting comes in, and I think as teachers we try our best, but also the home environment needs to be so conducive in relieving that stress on these particular learners. And it's throughout, it's actually the whole of high school, because all types of education is built upon the last year and the last year. So it's a foundation, but the type of learner that is made to that matric year is also a work in progress.
Definitely, and that is where the communication comes in. Remember that communication is an essential facet to a healthy emotional state of being. And our kids, we focusing particularly on the high school children when we talk about stress, but our little ones experience stress. If I look at my own example, my grade one child, every Thursday from the evening, he starts stressing out because they have a spelling test on Friday, and he'll tell me, "Mommy, I have stress."
As parents, we need to identify there are two types of stress. So I'm going to speak about this negative and positive types of stress. The positive being presenting a report to your class, or writing an exam, or going for an interview. These sometimes bring out the best in you. However, not any two learners are the same, and presenting to a class may not be for one learner as it is for the other. Like, some take it as a very stressful situation. This year I had to assess them on oral assessments, and you will not believe that a few of them wanted to do the oral privately and not in front of the class. Now, at this point in your 12 years of schooling, you should have grown in confidence, but again, it's a personality type and the type of stress that may be positive for one and negative for the other. So positive stress can motivate, encourage, and challenge you, like healthy competition amongst peers. That could be taken as a positive stress. I'm worried what my friend will get and I need to beat them. So that is a form of positive stress. Now, moving on to the negative stress, this is another word for distress. So it can be something that reduces your performance level and makes you unproductive. Example, I know a lot of parents that of the kids that I teach, they say punishment awaits you if you fail. So that's a negative stress that can be placed on a learner during an assessment or a test or whatever it may be, because they are preparing for it and studying for it, but because of that pressure of the punishment that's awaiting, that's a negative type of stress that's hindering their performance.
You know, again, Shaista, this is where the communication is so important between parents and their children, between parents and the educators, and then between educators and the learners. So learners need to obviously communicate with their educators so they know what is expected from them in the classroom as well as for assessment purposes. But parents need to have open communication with their children. You need to notice your child's behavior. You will be able to tell a change in that behavior and see when they are starting to get stressed out. We need to be aware of the worries that our children are facing, and we need to know what are their fears in terms of their education. Ask your child what is bothering him or her, and encourage your child to communicate openly with their educators. At home, it's important to ensure that even with our jam-packed schedules, our kids are always conversing with us so that we know what's going on in their lives.
You know, I've got four, and not all four are the same. So it doesn't have to be a formal sit-down. So what's going on in your life? How is school? How's this particular subject or teacher? It can be in passing. So my one son will openly divulge every single detail of his day, of the teachers, of the subject, of what's going on with his friends. Very, very communicative. And then I've got my youngest child who needs to be prompted. Okay, so how was your day? What's going on in this particular subject? How's your friends? Little types of conversations in passing also give off a lot of what your child is going through and how they're feeling about certain things. And it's important for us to discuss feelings, because that ultimately, those feelings tend to lead to stress.
Yes, and now more than ever, emphasis has been placed on the emotional well-being of children. Children are encouraged to be more aware of their emotional state of being at all times, and we need to know what triggers the negative state of their emotion.
And this is relevant because when I was at school, we never had subjects like life skills and life orientation, where it's geared towards how we are feeling or how we are growing or awareness of our bodies. We've had subjects which were less obvious about these type of issues. Now it's a more psychological process that these kids are actually learning it through subjects, and it's actually very amazing because teachers teaching these subjects form as guidance counselors or psychologists, and sometimes are very educated in how to deal with personal issues of kids. You must remember, not all children are happy at home when they come to school. They need us to relieve that sort of stress that they're going through. On the other hand, some children are not happy at school. So when they go home, they need us as parents to also be that role in that psychologist form. Obviously, we're not saying we are so learned where we can give them black and white advice.
Yes, definitely. But we are by no means qualified
but
counselors.
But also, just to relieve them of the burden of what's going on in their lives.
Yes, definitely. And I think subjects such as life orientation, life skills, was put into our curriculum because it was recognized as very, very needed. Remember that, like you said, children harming themselves is on the rise. And when we as parents or the adults around them are not aware of the worries they are facing, this is when they feel so alone. And we should never let the children in our community get to a stage where they are feeling alone, because when children start harming themselves, we are failing as a community.
I agree.
We should try and always give them encouragement, help them to outline their goals, and then effectively identify the steps that they need to take to achieve these goals. I like to tell my kids that always remember, proper planning prevents poor performance.
Yeah.
Meaning, if we know what we want from our lives in every aspect, in terms of education, then we as parents, as a family, can work out the steps that you can take to achieve that.
Now, that would be approaching it from academic point of view. Now, the emotional side is growing those kids up with confidence. As teachers in a classroom, never undermining any particular set of learners, always motivating them to be the best they are or do the best they can, and find some quality, be it academic, sport, cultural, or even just a personality type like humor, we need to make them more confident.
Yes, and you know, we are facing a time where kids are almost overscheduled. They are rushing from school to madrasa, and straight from madrasa to one activity, and then to tuition, and then the next activity. It's so, so important that children have downtime.
I think there's a lot to do in your day. Sometimes things don't seem to get done, but learning how to manage it and deal with the load and give time for everything, including having fun as a child.
This is so important for kids of any age, adults as well, because burnout is a reality in the world we are living today. Human beings require downtime. Pushing kids to always be either learning or practicing can sometimes hinder them totally. Downtime builds their strengths and adds to their character. Studies show that slowing down actually helps kids reach their full potential. Think of our kids like a computer, Shaista. So the more programs you open, the computer slows down. But once you start shutting the programs down, you'll slowly see that computer speeding up again.
Yes, definitely. And I think heading towards summer now, and as we spoke in the last show about how to approach the next 6 months, it's about them going outside, getting that fresh air, and being able to just ride a bike and not worry, I have a deadline, I have a homework due tomorrow. We need to, as parents, plan their day so that they do not feel burdened.
You know, Shaista, I can remember being young and sitting around the house and complaining to my mother that I was bored. And we don't see that in kids today. Boredom is actually very healthy for our children. And unfortunately, it's something that they just don't get enough of. And when we are bored, this is when the creative part of our brain actually activates. So we should really be careful not to overschedule these kids, because that is also a major cause of anxiety.
And I'm sure you'll agree, Sumi. These days, boredom is replaced with technology. So the moment a child is bored, they're either going to watch the TV, taking out smart pads, iPads, cell phones. Their exposure to this type of technology is, again, it's confined to them not thinking for themselves or having the ability to tap that left-hand artistic or creative side.
Shaista, I'm going to warn you, you've actually tapped into a very contentious issue for me, because my husband is an avid gamer. And I have actually recognized how this is shaping my children, and I am against it, because TV as well as gaming, it shapes them. It does not allow them to develop as individuals. It tells them what to think, how to act. It's violent, and I believe that gaming is actually the modern day plague.
You know, I had a reality check a few years ago when Kindle came out, and they were putting books on an iPad or a smart pad, and my kids asked me, so why do we have to read hardback books anymore? And I got a shock, because I felt like that used to be such a luxury and such a gift to have these books and the collections and grow your collection to a certain extent. And nowadays the stress of also, okay, my iPad needs to be charged, going back to them placing stress on themselves. They can't just pick up and read anymore. The light of the tablet and things like that all affects their well-being.
And definitely those are stress additives. Now, if we look at books, for example, that is definitely a stress reliever. My father-in-law often tells my kids that you can travel the world through a book. But you cannot do that with TV, because like I said, television, it shows our children a story. It tells them a story.
It's instant gratification.
Yes, and remember, our kids are living in an information age. Yeah. Everything is about instant gratification.
So there are different ways, Sumi, of coping and handling stress. Many different methods were suggested and even being taught through syllabuses. So I'm going to mention just six of them. The first one being identifying the stressors in the environment. So what's causing the stress? Second, that our kids are not following a balanced lifestyle, meaning not enough play time as compared to work time. Allowing learners, number three, time for physical recreation and relaxation. Number four, giving kids healthy and balanced nutrition. I mean, sometimes we look at those lunch boxes and we are like awestruck. Fifth one being forming a routine for them and allowing them to manage their time effectively. And the last, number six, being preparing in advance for stressful situations. Now, this has obviously got to do with exam times and things like that.
Look, it's very important, if you look at the physical environment in school as well as at home, sometimes lighting, clutter, too little or too much noise can actually be a cause of stress for learners. But remember, Shaista, a little bit of stress can serve as a motivational stimulus for children to get up and actually take action. Kids need to be taught by us how to convert their stress into action. An example of doing this is to set realistic, timely, and step-by-step targets for their deadlines.
I think there's no way of avoiding stress, because during our growths and our phases in our lives, we will be exposed to some sort of stress. I've jotted down some suggestions for how I manage my stress. So with my kids, it's simple things like ensuring they go to bed early. I think getting their time of sleep, 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours, is a must. Because as you said, the shutting down of the computer, you need to shut your body down.
Exactly, and the downtime even before sleeping, that calming down. You know, and this is again where the gaming is such a contentious issue for me, because I have taught learners who are busy whatever they're doing till late into the morning and are actually functioning solely on stimulant drinks during the day, which is so it affects their blood sugar levels, it causes stress, it affects brain function, and overall it's going to hinder them physically and mentally.
So leading to the second thing that I do is I give my kids vitamins and supplements, and I think this has more of a psychological effect on them, to say that you are taking these vitamin C's or the supplements and it will give you more energy. So they believe in it. The moment we believe in something, I think it has that effect on our body.
Definitely the mindset, but also remember that today our foods are so genetically engineered. They are filled with hormones, pesticides, etc. So sometimes we do have to supplement their brain function with a bit of vitamins.
Now, I am always criticized by my kids' school for doing this. So the third method that I do in helping them manage their stress is when they sit down to do their homework, I unpack their school bag, mostly to remove the dirt, because my boys are really oblivious to that. But also, I'd like to see what was done in the day with them. I like to see that they are writing neatly for their teachers and that they are presenting the best of themselves. Because what tends to happen is, and I know my kids, they like to finish things in haste and then carry on with just fooling around and playing. So I do that as a parent. I sit with them at the table, I remove their books for them, I help them pack for their timetable, and I do reasonable checks. So reasonable checks means I will not sometimes manage to do it every day, so every second day, but they know it's going to be done by me, and that way I am helping them be prepared for the next day.
And remember, Shaista, that's important, because going into any situation feeling prepared will limit their anxiety. Okay, we're now going to break for a quick ad break. And when we come back, we will just close up with our stress-related topic and go on to how involved you should be in your kids' education process. Welcome back to Teacher Moms. Today we are talking about managing the stress of our kids and learners. Remember that we spoke about all the different causes that of stress for our children. The one thing I didn't touch on yet, Shaista, is how the media places stress on our kids. Remember, especially if we look at our teens, they are inundated with success stories of teens who have already become millionaires, self-made. And this puts pressure on them. More than ever before, we see a generation of children who are so self-driven, and the expectations they put on themselves are sometimes so unrealistic, and this leads to a lot of undue stress.
I think also the overexposure that they now have. You must remember, when we were in schooling, our school life was basically going to school and going home and not discussing education thereafter. And here, they have access to social media, technology, the internet, their research is done online. So they are also exposing themselves to various other dynamics of this whole education system.
Yes, now let's look at ways that we can actively manage their stress at home. Number one, we should not put our fears and anxieties about their future onto them. They are facing those fears all by themselves. Then we should always give them feedback. Remember, we spoke about this generation being one of instant gratification. Any question they have, all they do is go to Google, they put that question in, and they've got the answer. So they are the information generation. They need our feedback. And when I talk about feedback, I'm not talking about constant praise. It's about not always praising or criticizing them. It's about constructive feedback. Tell them what you appreciate about what they are doing and tell them where they can be a little bit better.
So again, parents should not live through their kids, their dreams and their hopes and desires for that particular child. I know It came to me last year when my son was doing the HIFS, which is the Islamic part of the education, and it wasn't me living through him. It was purely a decision he had to make. Are you willing to burden yourself with this? Because it will take a lot of you. So I would not want to live my dream of becoming Hafiza through him. And I had to have that discussion with him. So again, you need to decide as a parent what type of reality you are living. Like, are you satisfied with them being what they want to choose, or will you guide them? Guide them. These are your options, but don't lead them towards
many
one.
Many times, especially in our communities, we put pressure on our children because of what we desire them to become. And that is not very healthy. So like I said, the feedback is very important. Then at home, breathing exercises, that alleviates immediate stress. We spoke about diet and nutrition. That is so important. Exercise, sometimes just stretching during study sessions, a little walk, etc. Chamomile or peppermint tea during exam time, it helps calm them down so they can sleep properly. And then very, very important, something that my parents, my father in particular, stressed on us when we were young, salah. When you are conscientious about your salah, it brings barakah to your life in so many different ways. And it gives you that little break, that downtime, that breathing space.
And I think also, like as we were speaking about our matrix earlier, at this point, no teacher or no parent can really affect you or assist you, your frame of mind, the way you are. So your creator is where you're going to get that solitude, where you're going to get that peace and go into that exam room and make peace with whatever's meant. And I, a lot of times, tell my kids in my class, destiny. You do the hard work, you put in your effort, but at the end of the day, what is meant for you, you will get.
And the power of dua. I think our learners sometimes need to have that ultimate belief in the power of their dua. Ultimately, at the end of the day, before that paper, before that soccer match, pick your hands up and talk to your creator. We need to inculcate this habit in them from a very young age.
We're leading on now to our next topic for a discussion for today. It is, how involved should parents get in the learning process? So there's three different spectrums to this question. The first being, you have the totally independent learner who doesn't require assistance from parents. And then the second form is the middle ground, where learners will ask their parents for assistance if they need it. However, the third one being the helicopter parent that mollycoddles their child with or without their need is almost them doing everything for their child except the assessment itself.
Now remember, Shaista, our most vital role in terms of involvement in the process of our children's education begins with our attitude. We are their first learning models. So it comes down to, what does education mean in your home? Our attitude towards education will inspire them and shape their own educational journey. I know personally, I am an advocate for learning in anything, in terms of our religion, school academic education. If you like a sport, go and learn about the sport. So I am passionate about learning, and I would love that to carry through to my kids.
Do you know, not only being an educated, but as an Afrikaans teacher, not passing your particular view about a subject onto your child. Like a lot of times, the irrelevance of the subject has been told to the learner who is now already demotivated to want to try in the subject because they now don't see the relevance of it. So I think also creating an environment of seeing the good and bad in everything. And sometimes we can't avoid a lot of the educational aspects.
Yes, so as teachers obviously motivate in the classroom, but parents, let's connect what they learn in school to our everyday world. When they learn something about science, about history, let's connect it just in the in the drive. In
make it practical.
Make it practical.
Yeah.
Look outside. And then obviously I like to connect it to Allah at the end of the day. Look outside. Tell them about the world around us. I know my mother is a life science teacher and I laugh at her because she always says that she chose life sciences as her specialty because she is in awe at the creation of Allah Ta'ala every time she's in her classroom, because every time she teaches anything about physiology or the plant tissue, whatever it is, she always says how our Creator created our bodies.
And it's good as a teacher to transfer that passion of what you teach onto the learners, and they pick it up very easily. I sat with my kids this morning and I asked them the question, because sometimes I criticize myself about being too involved in their lives, and I've got very different answers. So my 7-year-old said to me, I would love your help in everything. It makes my life easier. And then my 13-year-old said to me, you helped me in my foundation phase up to grade 5 into intermediate, but now I would like you to just back off. So again, your involvement is dictated by your kids at some point.
Your role in their education needs to evolve with their age. So if you look at our toddlers, you need to actively be there every step of the way. And then as they grow, you need to start backing off slowly, and then your involvement needs to primarily be at home, the encouragement factor, the support. You need to be checking their workbooks, because that is a major way that you can be up to date to see if your child is working in class, if your child is completing homework, marking and completing corrections, and that's also a way that you can check that their workbooks are being marked.
Do you know, I get horrified when after reports are given out, we get a lot of backlash from parents saying that, how did my child do so badly in a particular subject? When, in fact, as you're saying, these assessments are sent home to them with the corrections being done. You can actually see, pick up mistakes sometimes, which we are humans, we make during marking, whether we're marking 160 scripts or 20. You as a parent needs to make sure your child was assessed correctly, done the revision that they needed to, and give your feedback at that point. Not at the end of the term where you are questioning the entire term's work, which is a consistent breakdown of marks, and the curriculum requires continuous assessment, you know?
Exactly. So like I said, if you open your child's workbook and you see incomplete, 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 that is when, as a parent, you step in and you would try and encourage and make sure that your child is actively working.
And then we have the two mediums of how involved the parent should be. So the D6 now has become like a compulsory to have as a parent, because the school communicates most of its information through paperless now, which is the D6, and all to do with how the government wants us to now care more for the environment. And this is the reason the D6 is out there. Parents should be able to receive the messages, understand them on the D6, and then ask the questions. Again, we have the school diaries, which are compulsory, and if your school doesn't have diaries, we always have stores that sell diaries, so there's no loss of communication.
On that point, Shaista, remember that from as early as grade 1, part of the development of a child is the ability of a learner to translate messages correctly from school to the home, and for them to follow instructions. So sometimes everything is not communicated in the
diary
book or the diary, because the purpose of that exercise was to see that a child can convey a message correctly.
You know, Samia, as a teacher, one of the reasons I am not on parent groups is for the simple fact that I want to make my learners more independent, more communicative with their parents, because at a point where you are on these groups, they tend to ask you questions about things that were communicated, and communicated clearly, children understood it, taking the message. You are making sure when you give an instruction, it is well understood as an educator. So to be placed in that situation where you are inundated with questions on the one task, for me, is very frustrating, because our learners now again are being suffocated by their parents,
yes,
and spoon-fed.
Now remember, WhatsApp has become a primary source of communication worldwide, but it can be a problem in terms of the performance at schools. I know many a times we have had issues in the classrooms because of messages that have been received via the WhatsApp groups. And these WhatsApp groups are parent-only groups. So sometimes that builds stress among the parents because what happened with your child, and my child is doing this as opposed to my child didn't do that in class. And sometimes it's as simple as grade 5A had science today and grade 5B is only going to have science tomorrow.
Right.
It's
again,
no fault on the teacher.
It is a useful tool, but sometimes very misused.
Yes, so have trust in the school. As an educator, ethically, I don't like to be part of the WhatsApp groups. I'm only part of one group for my elder son because it's very diplomatic. I've personally experienced a problem in the past, many years ago, where someone commented on the group to say that the teacher shouted my child today. And someone else came in and said, oh, I should ask my little one, does the teacher speak to her like this? And by the end of that night, Shaista, they had, or rather we as moms, had villainized that teacher.
I think that's so unacceptable, especially because if you are not trusting me as a parent to a teacher, we are never going to get progression in the system. We are never going to get the best out of your child. And again, if you're going to question a child based on someone else's experience, the child is going to be looking for that same experience. They love to story tell. Again, a lot of times when...
Especially the little one.
When the parents come in for meetings and they give me their version of whatever happened in the school, then I would say to them, would you like to hear the truth or the other side, because there's always three sides to every story, as we know.
I like to say in my home that everyone's truth is different. So what happened to you, it doesn't mean that the child is necessarily lying. It's their perception. So your truth is different from my truth.
You know, I've had a lot of personal experience with, because my sons know I'm an educator, they try and get more information from me. So I've made it very clear when I go into meetings with my kids' teachers or SMT and I say, I am not here for confrontation.
Solely
I'm not here. I'm solely here to find out what is going on. Because again, as a parent, I want the best for my child. As a parent, I want to know, did this really happen? Is he really going through this? Is this supposed to be right academically? But sometimes you get with a lot of defensiveness from the school's part, so we need to also be diplomatic in the way we address issues and come to a compromising situation and say, it's a give and take. If I am the child's parent, I'm also needing to look at it from the teacher's point of view. Put yourself in that situation. You don't have to be a teacher to put yourself in a situation.
Look, and that's where the helicopter parenting or learning style is very ineffective, because this is really a situation of less is more. You need to be 100% involved as a parent, but 80% of that involvement needs to be at home. Number one, you need to be aware of the subjects your children are doing. You need to be aware of the class they are in. Who is their class teacher? Who are their subject teachers? You need to know when are their assessments running. All schools give out a term planner. Put the term planner up on your fridge.
Okay. I think those are very good methods of showing the parents how much to be involved.
Do not do their work. Your role is to assist.
I've had multiple parents in their handwriting, in my learner's book, sending work to class. And I'm so sorry, but I'm one of those educators who firmly believe not on, hey?
I cannot say this enough. Do not do their work. Assist.
I need to say, as an Afrikaans teacher also, Google Translate does not give you results for Afrikaans.
You know, I once taught at a school, and a learner used Google Translate, and I don't know what happened, but through a slight glitch, it translated her essay into German, not Afrikaans. And in the staff room, we had such a hearty laugh at this.
Because they are so reliant on other types of resources instead of themselves. They can't pick up a dictionary anymore, and my kids get frustrated when I tell them, do you want to know something in Afrikaans? There's a dictionary, make a list of words, and if you need my help, and yet I'm a specialist in the subject, I can easily do my kids' work for them, but what am I achieving? I don't need to be graded. I'm quite confident in my abilities, but then again, my children need to fail in order to succeed.
We need to be there to facilitate their learning process. So if we look at our foundation phase grades, we need to help them practice what they have learned at school. And then once they get into the intermediate phase, we need to slowly start backing off. Obviously, we still need to ensure that work is being done. Don't ever, ever let your child fool you. And this is me and my son. We are loggerheads about this always, because what homework do you have? No homework. I did all my work in school. And I often say, no maths homework? And then he looks at me and he's like, okay, I have maths homework. Mm-hmm. So remember, those subjects, maths, accounting, physical science, the kids generally will come home with work. So you need to ensure that they are working effectively at home. If you look at grade 10 to 12, you cannot have a learner at home who never takes out a book.
Mm-hmm.
So your involvement needs to primarily be in the home.
I have a question here from Yumna from Lanesha. Firstly, thank you, Sumaya and Shaista, for an excellent informative program. I have to agree that routine makes a world of difference for the child. They thrive on it with good time management, and they are able to manage their workload. As at being involved, I don't think in today's time parents have a choice. They have to be very involved, as there is a lot of work sent home, be it assessment or homework. The question is that Yumna is very frustrated. She says, isn't homework supposed to be a method to judge whether or not the child understands the work? Yet, a lot of the time, it's frustrating to see that my child hasn't a clue of how to approach the homework, and that's where the parent has to get involved.
Look, Shaista, this is a problem that many educators are frustrated with. Many of our education specialists are frustrated with, because our curriculum is assessment-based. So a lot of times it's just about covering that content and assessing the learner. And hopefully in the future we have specialists working to change this. But for now, what we can do with our learners is practice the work they have done in school at home. So make sure the homework is done with them and sit with them, assist them with it, especially the little ones.
You know, I can understand Yumya's frustration, because as a teacher, I am not a specialist in the variety of the subjects, maybe three or two. And as a parent who's not an educator, now imagine you are looking at maths after 20 some odd years, and you're trying to reteach a concept that your child didn't grasp but has homework in it. Remember last show I even said I had to learn how to use a scientific calculator, because as a commerce specialist I only use a financial calculator. So again, parents have to sit there, get stressed out in themselves to learn a concept and then teach it to their child. Again, not in the same method maybe, or the teaching style. I would say, if you are facing this as a parent, do not allow your child to do that homework. Write a note in the diary. Ask for that particular concept or section to be retaught to your child. There are many teachers, I know this because my colleagues are this way, we will not disregard this. We will take it upon ourselves. Again, it's got to do with us helping that child pass at the end of the term, and nothing can be brushed or swept under the carpet or ignored, because concepts build upon each other. So if your child doesn't understand something, don't try to reteach them. Ask for the assistance. There are ways and means of teaching them, whether it's extra classes, during our breaks, if you are willing to allow your child to have that, or even after school. Teachers are then available for that extra half an hour. They're not going to say no, particularly because we also judge our own teaching by the number of kids that actually pass our subjects, and we criticize ourselves by the number of kids that don't pass our subjects.
And this, again, is where encourage your child to communicate effectively with the educator.
Yes. The second question is from my dear friend Aisha from Cape Town. She's a dietitian, and she says that she has seen a lot of kids that are stressed out who binge eat. And she says that's why as parents, those lunch boxes need to be filled with healthy things as well. Things that hydrate them, like cucumbers, for example, an example that she gave. And then she also says, her question is, at which point do we know we need to involve psychologists in the, if our kids are undergoing stress?
Okay, so we obviously have to see, is the stress manageable for my child? Like we spoke earlier, is it positive or negative stress? And obviously, if you see it now physically affecting your child to the point where they can no longer function daily, that's when you need to consult a doctor or go to a professional caregiver.
Okay, and Aisha's second question was, apart from a child's report, what signs should a parent look out for to alert them that the child isn't coping? So for me, incomplete classwork is so important because your child is being distracted by some reason or is unable to maybe see the board from where they sit. It's little things that are hindering that type of performance. Again, the report is at the end of the term. So we need to be looking during the term before the final assessment. Is my kid coping with a particular topic, a term, things like that?
You need to keep tabs on the assessment planner. I know many educators, many schools, in fact, that insist that every task is signed by the parent after corrections is done so that the parent can verify that the child has done the assignment has been marked and corrections has been completed in class so that any queries can be addressed.
Look, the second thing I would say is behavior of the child, moodiness, especially with adolescents, a slamming of doors, wanting to be alone a lot, that type of indicators for emotional stress. Like I remember once my son came home and he didn't smile or he didn't kiss me on the cheek, which is like a norm. You pick up these little type of behavioral acts.
Okay, I've got a question here. It says, I went to a parents' day and one of the parents asked the appa for the next term's worksheets in the beginning of the school year. I felt so bad as a parent. Am I not doing enough? I think that, look, different parents involve themselves on different levels. If it was the beginning of the school year and it was just a meet and greet, you don't need the worksheets or the term planner for the next term. Remember, the school sends everything out at the time that it needs to be sent out. And this is again where we are going into the helicopter parenting. Remember, if you feel that you have something valuable to contribute to your child's school, then volunteer for their school functions. Join the SGB, but leave the curriculum to the curriculum experts.
And the teaching to the teachers. And again, I think this comes from a point of view where everyone believes teaching is a half-day job. But I would really like to blast that myth on air that we are working for that entire duration of school according to a timetable as well, teaching multiple subjects to multiple personalities and who need multiple different ways of psychologies, understanding their personalities. During our half an hour a day break that we have, we are having the nutrition in order to have the energy to address the second half of the day. And also, I think they need to realize that teachers are doing their best and are required by management and government with the additional pressures of that to do their best.
So remember, parents, the role of parents in education is crucial. It's to guide, structure, teach, coach, encourage, and to set the stage for your child's success, not for you to live their life. You need to be their biggest supporter, their fiercest cheerleader. But by definition, these words tell us that we need to work alongside our child. We need to hold their hand through the path that they are on. We cannot walk their path for them. We need to be actively giving them emotional encouragement. Remember, you need to equate this to teaching a toddler how to dress themselves. Sometimes it's frustrating to watch, but you need to let them get it right.
I really hope you enjoyed our show today. Jazakallah for listening. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Please feel free to send any queries or comments you have to 083-306-7940 and follow us on Facebook at Teacher Moms. Jazakallah for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.